Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. All right, Matt. So this is funny because if you think back to yesterday, before we even did this show, I said to you as one of the things that we should probably steer away from in terms of talking about on the show, it seems like we made our point about Nico Mirotic and possible trade scenarios. And I said, all right, we'll kind of ease up on that. I think people get the point here until actual news breaks. Funny, we don't even get through two episodes in a week before we got to go back to this. So if you're at work right now, if you're commuting, you didn't hear the news. There was a trade between the Pelicans and the Bulls that formulated early on today, and we'll get into all the details for you. But for right now, it's hit a snag and it doesn't look like it's going down. We also got a huge trade in the NBA with Blake Griffin, Detroit Pistons, and the Los Angeles Clippers. So we're going to dive all into that for you guys today. But Matt, it's been quite the 24 hours since we did our show last.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I said in yesterday's show, have patience, Bulls fans. This Nico trade might take a while longer. We might not see one until much closer to the February 8th deadline. And then we were all hit with a big teaser today. It was floating in the air as if it were a done deal for, I don't know, maybe a half hour or so between when Vincent Goodwill of NBC Sports Chicago sent out his tweet and then Woj of ESPN followed saying, there, you know, that deal, at least the one that they were discussing and supposedly agreed on, fell through. So it's been a crazy day on Bulls Twitter. A lot of theories being thrown out there, and I guess we have to wait a little bit longer. I mean, knowing how this stuff works, it'll probably be a news that breaks while we're in the middle of recording this, but hopefully for now we can just sort of give everybody an up-to-speed recap of where we are, what's happened, what we know, and what's most likely to happen moving forward.
Yeah, so we're going to start with the Nico Mirotic situation that happened today. Towards the end of the podcast, we want to let you guys in on our reaction to the Blake Griffin trade that went down last night. Also, we're going to have snippets from Locked On Pistons and from Locked On Clippers as well at the end, the back half of the show, like the last 10 minutes or so. So you guys can get that immediate reaction from those guys, which was great content, and those guys know the teams way better than we do, so we want to give that as part of our content for today's episode. But like you said, let's dive into this Nico rumor that just all of a sudden bursted out of nowhere early on this afternoon. So Vincent Goodwill of NBC Sports Chicago had tweeted out a tweet about 3 hours ago now, so we're recording here mid-afternoon on Tuesday, and said, hearing Nico Mirotic will be dealt to New Orleans Pelicans for Omer Asik and first round draft pick, sources tell NBC Sports Chicago. Like you had said, about 20 or 30 minutes later, it was shot down by Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN and saying that there had been a snag that had been hit between the two teams and the deal was off for right now. So, Matt, your immediate reaction if this deal did go down and that was what the Bulls were going to get in return, how did you feel about it?
I felt okay about it. I mean, honestly, we knew that the goal for the Bulls front office with this whole Nico situation was to move him and to get a first-round draft pick for him. Now, the deal never became finalized, so we still don't know what, if any, protections the Pelicans were trying to put on that pick, because as of right now, they sit 18th in the draft order. But they just lost Boogie Cousins for the season, for the rest of the season, with that Achilles injury. Really unfortunate for them. I think adding Nico to try to serve as a offensive weapon and a stretch four to pair alongside Anthony Davis might be an effort of theirs to make up for, obviously not all, but some of the loss of Cousins, and keep themselves in this playoff race. Because when looking behind them, looking over their shoulder, there's really not a team in the Western Conference that's threatening to replace them. Utah would have to have a very impressive stretch. The Clippers just sold Blake Griffin, as you mentioned, and they're also looking to sell DeAndre and Lou Williams. So the Pelicans and their front office, I think, are still determined to make the playoffs. But there's no guarantee that happens. They could theoretically slide even further, and maybe this draft pick, of first-round pick of the Pelicans, moves from 18 to, I don't know, 17, 16, 15. So you wonder what protections may have been on there if this deal did happen. Even if there were some kind of top five or top 10 protection on it, I'd think that the Bulls front office, if they got this deal done, if they still do get this deal done for the same, essentially the same thing of sending Nico, taking on Ashik's contract, and getting a first round pick, I would consider that a win.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that. It's like, the fact that the Bulls would have to take on the money for Omer Asik, I mean, I get it. Like, maybe people are cringing a little bit. And I know ESPN's Zach Lowe wasn't a big fan of this, like, when it first went down. And obviously now it's being nixed a little bit right now, mid-afternoon on Tuesday. We don't know if a deal's still going to be in place or if they're trying to work out some of these kinks. But he didn't seem like he was too big of a fan that the Bulls were taking on the amount of money that they would have to take on for Omer Asik. But I think what's funny is we talked about deals with other teams outside of the Pelicans, and with, like you had said, with Boogie Cousins going down this weekend with that awful ACL injury, it kind of opened up the Pelicans as being a reasonable spot to need a guy that can stretch the floor and shoot threes. And you look at Omer Asik's contract, and obviously he's owed $25 million through 2019 and 2020.
But only $3 million guaranteed in the second of those two remaining seasons.
I like that. I like the fact that that's part of it. And so that's why I was like looking at that. I was like, from Zach Lowe's perspective, I can get it. But like, as a Bulls fan, and what the.
And as far as the 10 or 11 mil owed to him next season, I mean, whatever. The Bulls are under the Bulls are not even like at the cap floor as it is. And it's not like they're going to try to spend that money on a big free agent next season anyway.
And I thought about this too. It's like, we talked about a possible trade to Portland, and we figured like, all right, Portland's probably going to want to get out from underneath that Myers Leonard contract. That Myers Leonard contract is almost identical to what Omer Asik is. And I know, like you had said, that there's only $3 million guaranteed on that back half part of that contract. You'd owe Myers Leonard a little bit more money, but the Bulls are willing to take on these large contracts in order to acquire that first round pick. So I was going to applaud John Paxson and Doug Collins for actually going out there and doing exactly what they said and taking on that big money. Now, this is not to say that this deal isn't going to go down, but it sounds like, I know you had said that maybe it was about protections with the pick, but now I feel like the people that I've texted are close to the team have said this might be more so on Nico Mirotic than anything else, because if you think about it, the Pelicans aren't too thrilled with being whether or not that they have to choose to pick up Nico's option for next year right away. And that seems like that's been the biggest snag of this deal so far.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it is. So Nico, if the Bulls do not pick up his option for next season, can veto this trade. And Nico would obviously prefer that $12.5 million for next season to be picked up, so he has guaranteed money on the books next year. The Pelicans, meanwhile, would prefer to take Nico with that option in their pocket so that depending on what kind of money Boogie Cousins is demanding as an unrestricted free agent this coming summer, Boogie's UFA this summer. So if the Pelicans want to keep him, or at least try to keep him, maybe they would rather have $12.5 million in wiggle room than another season of Nico Mirotic. That's kind of where this is right now. Another factor to think about is that Nico, if he is traded without the option being picked up, loses his bird rights, which then essentially would mean if the Pelicans did want to keep him on board next season, they would do so using an exception contract, which would be less than the $12.5 million Nico would get if his option was picked up. So Nico kind of is the one holding up the deal right now because he wants that $12.5 million guaranteed rather than being traded without the option being picked up and losing his bird rights.
Yeah, and I think something else to factor into this is on top of that, the $12.5 million that he's owed next season if an option is picked up, like, I don't blame Nico for saying, whoa, let's slow down on this, because if they're not going to pick up my option for next year, $12.5 million is a lot of money for Nico Mirotic, because look at what he did in the summer. What was he offered this summer? Not a whole lot of nothing. It took the Bulls to basically to September to sign him, and he realized that in restricted free agency, he wasn't getting a whole lot of attention. And this summer especially, there isn't a whole lot of teams out there that have a lot of money to spend, especially on a stretch four guy in Nico Mirotic, where you've seen 6 weeks of great play out of him. Like, so for Nico especially, this is important for him to pick up that $12.5 million for next year. For the Pelicans on their side of it, they're trying to shed some of this money, and I don't know if they're big fans of having to pick up that option and bring him back. See, like, to me, I get it from the money standpoint, and if they want to go out and get DeMarcus Cousins and try to keep him with the Pelicans for long term, I get that, but you also have to think about the possibility that DeMarcus Cousins is not going to come back next year, and having Nico Mirotic in a pretty solid contract for the type of player that he is, and maybe the Pelicans would want him to be, $12.5 million isn't a whole lot, but the Pelicans have a lot of money tied up in some guys that have been underperformed for them. I mean, I'm looking at the roster right now. Solomon Hill's owed $12.7 million next year. Omer Asik's owed $11.2 million. Etuan Moore.
They still owe Etuan Moore money, former Bull.
Etuan Moore, $8.8 million. And then there's a bunch of guys owed like between $5 and $7 million next year. So right now as it sits.
And they have Drew Holiday's gigantic contract.
Oh, yeah. $26.1 million he is owed for the next four seasons. And if they pick up his option in 2021-22, so $27 million. So the Pelicans are kind of like in this, I don't know, they're in this weird situation where if they want to push for the playoffs right now, they've got to go out and get somebody. But I can understand it from Nico Mirotic's side and from the Pelicans side, where both teams are not going to agree. So where do you think this is going to ultimately go if the Pelicans are still interested in Nico Mirotic? What are the best options, and what would be things to try and smooth things out for both sides that they could get a deal done?
See, to me, this is kind of, it's hard to say where do you go from here, because I mean, somebody has to budge. And it's not necessarily that the bull, you know, who blinks first between the Pelicans and the Bulls, because really the vital piece of this puzzle in this, you know, three-party dance is Nico. Will Nico agree to waive his no-trade veto power and take a trade to New Orleans without having that option picked up? Maybe he looks around and says, you know, I kind of really wanted to go play with Rubio in Utah. I'd start there right away. But you know what? Hey, he can start in New Orleans right away now with Boogie out. And he can be a stretch four with AD. Also, another factor, I mean, we heard this in a Sun-Times column just last week. Nico's on record saying that Rajon Rondo is the favorite guy he's ever played with. Favorite teammate ever. Rondo is in New Orleans right now. Maybe Nico wouldn't mind going and playing there with Rondo. To me, it's not about, well, okay, do the Bulls need to throw in a second rounder, or do the Pelicans need to agree to, you know, exercise that team option on Nico and kind of, you know, swallow that in terms of, well, we'll worry about the Boogie summer discussion later. For now, we want Nico. We want Asik's money off our books. Let's just do this. I mean, yes, theoretically, the Bulls or Pelicans could blink in that regard, but I think the person that needs to blink is Nico.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how much budging there is to do that. And if I'm the Bulls front office, too, I'm calling other teams immediately. Like, I'm going and calling Portland right away, or the minute I step off that plane, which the Bulls are headed to Portland to play them on Wednesday, I'm saying, all right, let's, you know, the Pelicans deal didn't work out. Let's see if we can work out something with you guys. And if they're willing to take on Nico's money for another year, then maybe that's a place to work out. Another layer to this, too, you talked about Rajon Rondo, which I think is the funniest thing, is like, if Rajon Rondo with his expiring contract, or a guy like Jameer Nelson, who's owed $2.2 million and is expiring after this season, and Rondo's owed $3.3 million expiring after this season, if Rondo was in a potential trade where the Bulls would receive Rondo back along with Omer Asik, maybe that was another layer to this and why Nico said, you know what? No, like, if I'm going to go play with the Pelicans, I want to play with Rajon Rondo. And if you're sending him back to Chicago, that doesn't do me a lot of good. So this is what we talked about when we were like, right at the beginning of January, when we said, you know, a move that the Bulls could make could be out there, and there might be a move to be made, and it would be advantageous for both sides, but Nico still has the ultimate hand here, and that he could say, you know what, I don't want to go play there, or you know what, they're not going to guarantee my money for next year, I don't want to play there either. So that's why it's funny to me that people forgot that Nico still has the upper hand here until the Bulls either pick up that option or find a team that's willing to pick up that option.
Yeah, essentially, and that's something else that I pointed out earlier today when all this craziness was happening, is that maybe there's a situation where the Bulls, you know, because we heard from Casey Johnson, among others, that there is, hypothetically, as of the most recent talks, a second player coming to Chicago from New Orleans. It's Omer Asik and an unnamed player. It could be that the Bulls front office and Fred Hoiberg and all of these young Bulls who were all so high on Rondo last season said, hey, you know what, maybe let's have Rondo for the second half of this year's rebuild, a good veteran locker room guy. You know, maybe they're still trying to deal Lopez somewhere else before the deadline and would have a void as far as that veteran leadership type role that Rondo could fill. But Nico, whose option still hasn't picked up, is saying, you know what? No, you can't send me to New Orleans without my team option being picked up and take away the one guy in New Orleans that I specifically really want to play with. I mean, that's an option. It's obviously right now just a theory. And as you mentioned, maybe it's Jameer Nelson who would be coming back to the Bulls as well. Because the reason Pelicans have to send somebody in addition to Asik is that they are right up against the hard cap. And Nico's contract is just bigger enough than Asik's that they would be above that hard cap without sending somebody else. And Rondo and Nelson have the two contracts that most realistically would be able to be thrown in as aspiring deals to keep the Pelicans under the cap and to balance the contracts of the trade. So maybe that's a facet here. Maybe Nico is saying, all right, look, I'll waive my trade veto power, even if you guys aren't picking up my option, but I want to go play with Rondo. If you're sending Rondo back this way, then no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hold out.
Yeah, and then, like, to me, that was the interesting factor to this, because, like, I didn't even think about Rondo being a possible option being tossed into a trade until then I started to think. I'm like, okay, go back to what John Paxson said at the end of the presser, you know, the season-ending presser last year after the playoffs, and one of the first things they started with was talking about Rondo and his impact on the locker room and how they felt that he was an essential piece to growing the young guys together and molding the young guys together. And
I can't underscore some of the, you know, the positive, for example, of Rondo being with our young guys. That was you know, inside our building, we understand how important that was. You know, it started last summer when he started hanging out with our guys in summer league and that type of thing. And to be very candid with you, when we had that little incident where Dwayne and Jimmy spoke up in January, Rajon, when he stood up for our young guys, that empowered them a little bit. And that probably was a moment that we can point to and say there was some growth. It might have been small, but there was some growth with these young guys because they felt they had a voice as a young player, and for us that was important.
For me, I was like, okay, if Rondo's going to come back in this deal, the Bulls obviously need point guard depth. They need help right now, especially with Chris Dunn being out, and your next options are Jerry and Grant playing starting minutes. You've got Ryan Arcidiacono and Cameron Payne. Like, we talked about this yesterday, the desperate point guard help that the Bulls need. And bringing back Rondo, who it seemed like the Bulls front office was high on before they decided to flip the script and trade Butler, it seems like that would be advantageous for the Bulls. The snag here again is that Nico Mirotic was one of his favorite teammates, and maybe that's one of the bigger factors too. Not only the money, but being able to play with somebody else. I just think there's multiple layers to this deal that makes me feel like there might not be a deal going down with New Orleans, and maybe the Bulls have to look elsewhere.
And that, like you said earlier, the Bulls front office, let's all hope, are doing their due diligence and talking to other people simultaneously, because maybe you find a deal somewhere else, whether that's Portland. Obviously, it's not going to be Detroit now. They've already made their big move getting Blake. We can talk about that in a second. Utah, still out there. I know those talks have kind of faded recently. I don't think the Bulls have any interest in getting favors for a half a season. I don't think Utah is going to send favors and a first-round draft pick for Nico. The Bulls would also like Rodney Hood. We've heard that maybe Utah is a little bit more willing to shop him than they were recently. The Bulls don't want Alec Burks. Like, those are all factors that are still in play. But even if the Bulls could leak some kind of, we are far along in talks with Team X in a deal for Nico Mirotic, if they can perhaps scare the Pelicans into picking up that Nico option, because the Pelicans don't want to lose out on their opportunity to clear a Sheik off their books, maybe all the Bulls need to do is get close to a Nico deal with somebody else, and then they can say, oh, Pelicans, here you are calling us back. Perhaps you have different terms that you're willing to negotiate now. You know, obviously that would take some pretty impressive financial, you know, or some impressive executive maneuvering from certain individuals that Bulls fans are mostly skeptical of as far as their ability to execute trades, but it's a possibility.
Let's talk real quick before we get to the Blake Griffin stuff too, because obviously there's a lot of rumors going out there. There's a lot of information being thrown out there, and we don't know any, we outside of what we just told you guys, there are some theories and there's some stuff being thrown around, and we don't know if it's clear that these kinks that they're trying to work out through this trade are just things where they can convince Nico to go to New Orleans, or if there's a thing where they're sending a certain player back. But I think another facet to this is, how committed is New Orleans to actually making the playoffs and being good? If I'm a guy like Anthony Davis and I'm on that team and I see Boogie Cousins go down like that, and I think to myself, I'm like, oh God, like, is this team going to fall out of a playoff spot because we just lost arguably one of our best players, the best teammate I have on this team? Like, in the fact that maybe the Pelicans don't want to pick up that option for next year, like, would that at all, I wonder, piss off any of those guys on that team right now in saying, you know what, we still want to make the playoffs, we still want to be competitive, and we want to be out there? Like, to me, that would kind of frustrate me if I'm a player who's on that team and it's obvious that they need help in their front court, and then the Pelicans are screwing around saying, well, we don't want to pay Nico that money. Like, to me, I think I would be more frustrated if I was a star on the Pelicans and with them playing this financial game, more so than, you know what, we lost Boogie, but we need help right now because we're still a playoff team. Like, reminder here, the Pelicans are 27-22. They sit the sixth seed in the Western Conference right now. In order for them to fall out of the playoffs, They'd have to fall back six games. So the Clippers are right there, and we just said it. The Clippers just made a trade, and I don't see them pushing their way into a playoff spot anymore, especially losing Blake Griffin, and if they move DeAndre Jordan. And then you've got Utah after that, who's sitting at 21-28. So regardless if the Pelicans decide whether or not they're still going to try to be competitive or not, there's also that factor too, is like, how far do they slide down, and is it advantageous for them to think maybe we don't need that extra player in order to still make the playoffs, or maybe we do in order to stay in the playoff hunt?
I think absolutely the Pelicans are still trying to get to the playoffs. I mean, we heard rumors that at the beginning of this season with, you know, the Boogie Cousins and AD, like the Twin Towers, you know, two of the most talented bigs in the league, like, we should be a playoff team. We heard that Dell Demps, their VP and GM, was on the hot seat. Like, make the playoffs this season or you're out. And obviously, you probably get a little bit of a pass because one of your two studs Boogie Cousins, a guy that is, you know, an all-star starter this year, goes down with a season-ending injury when you are primed to make the playoffs. You're in playoff position as when he goes down, just, you know, a little past the halfway point of the season. Still, I think they would, their plan moving forward, especially if they're trying to bring in a stretch four to throw into the starting lineup to pair with AD like Nico, absolutely their plan is still to make try to make the playoffs. Because at this point, they've won too many games to really go the opposite direction.
Does it look bad in terms for the New Orleans Pelicans if they say, you know what, we don't want to take on that Nico money? Does that look bad to DeMarcus Cousins, who's going to be a free agent now, and say, well, if the Pelicans are cheap enough to where they don't want to pay a guy $12.5 million that could have a major impact on this team, maybe I'll go and look somewhere else? Because what does that mean for me in terms of how much money they're going to offer me, what kind of commitment they're going to have over the next 4 or 5 years that they would sign him to? I think that should play a factor. I don't know how big of a factor that plays, but...
Are you talking about hypothetically putting yourself in Boogie Cousins' shoes, saying if they're stingy about picking up 12.5 for Nico, what does that mean they'll be stingy about with me? Is that what you're saying?
No. So obviously DeMarcus Cousins is going to get the max contract, right? We're both in agreement that he's one of the best players in the NBA. My thing would be DeMarcus Cousins looking at this situation and saying, okay, if I'm here for 5 years and Anthony Davis is here for an extended period of time too, we saw the type of money that they threw at guys like we said, Drew Holiday and Solomon Hill and some of these other guys. Maybe that makes him think, well, are you guys really serious about trying to win and go out and get talent? Like, or are you guys going to play the financial game and be cheap and say, you know what, this is the best we can offer you guys on the floor. You guys got to just go out there and deal with it. Like, to me, a star player that would need help too. Like, it's obvious. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins aren't going to get it done by themselves. So to me, it would be a factor to DeMarcus Cousins in thinking, well, if I can go to another team that's willing to bring in other guys around us to be some type of competitive champion, championship driving team, that would make me think, okay, I'm going to shift my gears a little bit here and look at other opportunities that are going to be willing to bring in other guys and not scared to bring in some type of extra money in order to win. Like, that would be my only factor. Does that scare you at all? Would that scare DeMarcus Cousins if you were him, saying that a team didn't want to bring in Nico Mirotic because they had to pick up a $12.5 million option next year?
I mean, maybe that's a factor. I think, look, if you're Cousins entering free agency, I think you have some concerns, but mostly it's, are we good enough, me and Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday, to really contend in this Western Conference? And I mean, look, Davis is in his early prime. He's 24. Cousins is right in the middle of his prime. He's 27. If the Pelicans manage to keep those two together for a while longer, yeah, they have a window ahead of them. But as you said, it's about getting the right pieces around them. And the Pelicans recently have thrown some weird money at role players. Like, look, I think Etuan Moore earned that contract, and I think he's a solid player. The Ashik deal obviously was garbage. The Jrue Holiday deal, no offense to him, but I think he's grossly overpaid. So you might, yeah, if you're Boogie, you might have some concerns about what the Pelicans front office is doing and who they're offering what money to. But my bigger concern would just be, is the New Orleans Pelicans where I want to spend my prime years? Because it's not a major market team. Even though you have Anthony Davis now, his free agency isn't that far around the corner, just a couple of years. And what is the likelihood that you actually have championship contention window anywhere in that, in your remaining 20s and early 30s prime, if you're Cousins and re-sign up big to stay in New Orleans? If I'm him, I'm doubting that majorly.
Let's get to the other trade real quick before we give you guys the Locked On Pistons and the Locked On Clippers view of this Blake Griffin trade to Detroit and what went back to the Clippers. Matt, I just want to get your reaction from last night. How did, when you saw this go down before any of these Pelicans, this Pelicans Nico rumors came out this early afternoon, how did you feel about this? How did you feel this was going to spin the market for Nico and for the Bulls in this perspective for Detroit Detroit to go out and go get a superstar in Blake Griffin.
Well, so obviously, first, from the Bulls' perspective, I took it as, all right, well, the Pistons are no longer an option for Nico. I think we can all pretty much agree on that as being off the table. And then just from a basketball trade X's and O's perspective, I thought, what the hell is Stan Van Gundy doing? What on earth are the Pistons doing? No knock against Blake Griffin. When healthy, he is still only 28 years old, and he is a great NBA talent. But how often is he healthy, really? How often, how much time has he spent in the prime of his NBA years on the sidelines, nursing various injuries? And you look at what the Pistons have. The Pistons have been just in an absolute free fall since Reggie Jackson got hurt. They're, you know, on the outside looking in as far as the playoffs now. And you basically gave yourselves with this trade, so you're sacrificing a couple of, you know, young starting pieces like Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley. They also throw in Boban. They throw in a future first and a future second for Blake Griffin. And you look at the contracts, you know, like obviously that was a big story this past offseason was, will the Clippers keep Blake Griffin? And they went through this big, you know, free agency pitch to keep him, you know, did like a fake jersey retirement at the Staples Center, insinuating that Blake should be a Clipper for life and all this shit. And now the Pistons have the pleasure of paying Blake $31 million next season, $34 million the season after that, and $36 million the season after that. Oh, and an option in 21-22 for $39 million. Hey, guess what? You're also paying Andre Drummond $25 million next season, $27 million the season after that, and an option of $28.7 million the season after that. Are you kidding me? All that money to a lesser version of Boogie and AD? The sort of Twin Towers thing? And P.S., the Pistons don't have a backcourt worth playing alongside that powerful frontcourt. I know you talk about, well, maybe you can like run the offense through Blake Griffin at times. Sure. But really? I mean, really, Detroit? What are you doing?
I'll take it from two angles here real fast. First, from the Detroit's angle, I kind of understand where you're coming from and saying, like, what are you guys doing? For me, I feel like this is a ploy for not only fans to be re-energized by the Pistons, but also they just built that brand new stadium, that Little Caesars, whatever it's called, Little Caesars Palace or whatever it's called, in Detroit, where literally nobody is going. I think they have one of the lowest attendance rates in the NBA outside of places like Atlanta. Like, you have an opportunity to bring in a superstar for the first time in what, how long? Since what? Since Ben Wallace was there and since Rip Hamilton and Rasheed Wallace were there. I think this is kind of a desperation move by the Detroit Pistons, and it could play out to be bad. But I mean, if Blake Griffin does stay healthy and you got Andre Drummond there too, it could play in a way where Pistons fans could be a little bit happy that finally they're going to be competitive for a while. They've got a superstar there. You've got the new stadium to try and draw fans. So from the Pistons aspect, I can see why they did this. I think they gave up a ton to get a guy that has had so many injuries to bring him to Detroit. From the Clippers side, I think the Clippers went ahead and looked at what the Bulls did and go, you know what? The Bulls were kind of hanging out in mediocrity for a couple years. They still had an asset that they could trade, and they dumped him off and got three solid assets to bring back, revitalize this rebuild, and kind of get a head start. And in the Clippers scenario, they got those pieces back. They've got a couple first-round picks, and then if they move DeAndre Jordan on top of that, like, that could be a quick rebuild. And so maybe they're playing a play out of John Paxson, Gar Foreman's book and saying, you know what, we're going to kind of rebuild this on the fly and still try to be competitive and grow some of these young guys that we have, but also at the same time unload some of these unbearable contracts in a place where we were kind of stuck in mediocrity too with these two stars and couldn't go anywhere. And when Chris Paul left and then Blake Griffin too, and now with DeAndre Jordan possibly being out, I thought the Clippers stole away the show on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good move for them all around. And, I mean, Woj, when breaking down this trade yesterday, used that same phrase, sort of a rebuild on the fly. And I quoted his tweet and said, hey, sound familiar? That's pretty much exactly what the Bulls tried to do with this Butler trade, and it seems to be working thus far. If you're the Clippers, you like these pieces. I thought it was funny that Matt Barnes on Instagram had a reaction saying, like, you know, they're trading away Blake and, you know, they let Paul go and they're probably going to trade away DeAndre. And really, nobody's realizing the problem is Doc, a.k.a. Doc Rivers. I think a lot of people within the organization who have played for Doc still feel like he needs to go. And, you know, you wonder if he's interested in taking on the brunt of responsibilities of a rebuild on the fly, as we're talking about. But another element that you might need to be thinking about is the LeBron James sweepstakes. I know most everybody talks about if LeBron were to leave Cleveland and head west, probably the Lakers, a more exciting team to be a part of because they're the team with the legacy. That's the Magic Johnson. That's the Jerry West, et cetera, et cetera. But you look at what the Lakers are right now, and you look at maybe what kind of young core the Clippers could piece together. I don't know. Maybe the Clippers have a fighting chance in the LeBron James sweepstakes.
We'll keep everybody up to date, too, on social media, on Twitter. If you're not following us, we're going to keep you up to date as we go through the next couple of days. If anything should spur off, we'll try to do a reactionary pod for you guys if there does become a situation where a deal is final and in place for Nico Mirotic. But obviously, we want to give you guys the initial reactions from both Locked On Pistons and Locked On Clippers here as we end the show. So we're going to get right to those, and that'll be it for today.
The Pistons got Blake Griffin in a big deal on Monday afternoon. Blake's been one of those villains, one of those guys you have loved to hate over the past several years on the other side of the court. But the good news is that's basically Pistons DNA. Now, it's not exactly the same way that Griffin's built his reputation that the Pistons had over the past several decades with their toughness that has been personified over the years, but we will see how it goes. And certainly it's a lot of money for a long time for a guy with a big injury risk. But we've seen Detroit teams in the past, they've needed to find different ways to get top talent. They haven't really made things happen in free agency, and Stan Van Gundy has not made it happen through the draft in his 4 years so far with the Pistons as well. But hey, the move, it's something interesting, and that's more than we can say about what this team has done over the past decade. It's a franchise that's been lost in the woods since the going-to-work era. Really not much good to say about this team, really not much to say about this team at all. As far as the deal, they didn't give up Luke Kennard, which would have been pretty much a disaster. They didn't give up Stanley Johnson while his value is low and the team could maybe be opportunistic and buy low for him in his third year. So there's some things to like about it. They got rid of the Boban's contract, which is a good thing as well. They did give up that first-round pick, but there doesn't seem to be a whole lot in this draft to love past the top seven or eight players. And hopefully the Pistons pick doesn't end up in the top seven or eight. Right now, I've advocated on this podcast about trading Avery Bradley a bunch in the past couple weeks, so you know where I stand there. As far as Tobias Harris, certainly we're not crazy about losing him in Pistons Nation. He's a great guy, an easy guy to root for the fans. But all season, we've kind of waited for a little bit more from him. He got better going into last year and kind of carried this last year's team through a horrible season and has been the most reliable scorer this season as well. But we've talked a lot about some of those quiet 20-point games that we've always been waiting for a little bit more from him. He can't seem to get to the free throw line in late in games and can't really be a good scorer in the fourth quarter. We need someone who can get a bucket a little bit easier than that. Well, Blake Griffin is here and he's that guy. He's a wide body. He's a crafty scorer. I remember when the Pistons beat the Clippers this year, Griffin at times can kind of just put his butt right into Anthony Tolliver, take him down to the lane, and did a lot of work on one of the top defenders in the league, although Tolliver's not as strong as Blake Griffin, and that was going to be a matchup problem. But those are some of the matchup problems that the Pistons will look to exploit when they have Blake Griffin on their side, and it's something they didn't have before. Another interesting thing with Griffin is, what does this do to Andre Drummond's spot in the high post of the offense? We saw that Andre's had good court vision there, but also saw that he was limited when some of the things broke down initially when that high post offensive set. No way was Andre going to be knocking down anything outside of 8 feet, but he also couldn't drive to the hole when he tried to go from the three-point line as well. Seems like Blake Griffin would be good for that spot in the post, but then what do you do with Andre? But I think some of those thoughts of this guy's in the high post, this guy's in the low post, kind of oversimplifies things a little bit. There are a lot of possessions in an NBA season, and why can't guys alternate between spots in the posts along the way? And along those lines, Andre, with his, you know, maybe get him back a little bit towards the baseline, not in a post-up position, but kind of out of the way a little bit at times, stay out of the way of Blake's real estate in the post, maybe set some screens on the perimeter, and also kind of take advantage of maybe some of the defense sagging towards Blake, look for lobs as well. And then a lot of this Pistons franchise hinges on Reggie Jackson getting back healthy, and maybe we'll see if Blake and Reggie can kind of duplicate some of the success they had in Lob City with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin there. But some other scattered thoughts. This is probably an indication that Stan Van Gundy is back for next season to coach out the fifth and final year of his contract, and also in the front office as well. Whatever happens the rest of the way with this season, you can make the argument that this move and this new team is going to take more than the 34 games left this season to be analyzed. But my bottom line is this. Before the trade, there was nothing really to like about this Pistons team this season, and really not much to look forward to next year too. Well, now it will be interesting, which is more than we could say on Monday morning. Since the trade, which was only a couple hours ago now, I've heard from about 20 different people on texts, and I promise you that these are not people who are thinking about the Pistons over the weekend. I threw out a query on Twitter about what do you think, and got all sorts of responses, most of them negative, but at least that there were some responses there. Plus, hey, the Pistons are in the news for the first time in a long time, and that's a good thing for a change. Will it be a good thing a few years from now? I'm certainly skeptical about it, but it might be fun to find out.
So, the Clippers traded Blake Griffin. I'm Lucas Han, host of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm going to walk you through the Clippers' perspective on this deal. The first thing that you have to know about this deal is it's tremendously emotionally impactful for Clippers fans, probably in a way that it doesn't impact the new members of the front office, Steve Ballmer, who's owned the team for a few years, Jerry West, who's newly brought in. Blake Griffin was picked with the Clippers' first overall pick in 2009. He's been at the center of every discussion regarding the organization in the last 9 years. He scored over 10,000 points for the team. He's been an All-Star 5 times. He's been on an All-NBA team 4 times. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal player. And in a big part, even more than the Chris Paul era, the overall Blake Griffin era, which started before and now stretched half a season after Chris Paul's time with the team, lifted the Clippers out of irrelevance and kind of put them on the national map, put them in nationally televised games, put them in SportsCenter highlights in a way that they just hadn't been before, and probably in a way that a lot of other teams or fan bases might not be able to understand, because there are few teams in sports that were as irrelevant before that 2009 draft as the Clippers had been. But Blake Griffin made the team relevant. He made people care about them. And even with all of his faults, with his shortcomings, he certainly is not someone who was popular with other fan bases around the league, but he is a guy who has meant a lot to the Clippers and their fans over the last decade. And so it means a lot to these fans that Blake Griffin has been moved. But from the front office's perspective, they almost can't afford to look at it in that emotional light. And they felt as though Blake Griffin, about to turn 29 years old in March, with his injury history, having missed significant amounts of games in each of the last 3 years, having missed 15 games so far this season, seemingly always getting banged up and hurt just in time for the playoffs, and not being at his best in the postseason, and with a massive 5-year contract that the Clippers just had to give him last summer to retain him, they felt like it was something that they had to get out of for the long-term benefit of the team and of being able to build a winning and championship-contending team. Frankly, they felt like paying Blake Griffin $30 million a year this year and more in each of the next 4 years after this one was not something that they could build a championship team around. And that's not something that is easy to swallow for Clippers fans who have loved Blake Griffin for so many years. It's, you know, maybe it's not something that ends up being a good trade. The package they got for him certainly isn't something that blows you away. It wasn't some godfather offer. They got Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban Marjanovic, a 2018 first-round pick and 2019 second-round pick from the Pistons, which is a decent package, but I think it's the kind of package that says to me the Clippers were looking to move Blake Griffin to get out from under this contract, to try to retool and rebuild on the fly, rather than the Pistons called the Clippers with some phenomenal offer that blew the Clippers away and they just had to trade Blake Griffin even though it wasn't something that they wanted to do. And so I think that this is a really, really telling move for where the front office is, how they evaluate this roster and the other players on the roster, and what they think the right move is going forward for this team with, you know, in regards to other trades and other free agency moves. I think the Clippers are going to continue to sell talent at the deadline, which is not something that I necessarily foresaw them doing. I certainly didn't think they would move Blake Griffin, but guys like Lou Williams, guys like DeAndre Jordan, even a newcomer like Avery Bradley, are all guys that the Clippers could look to move in the next 10 days as we head towards the trade deadline, trying to acquire more draft picks, more young talent, create more cap flexibility going forward. It is going to be fascinating to see what this franchise and front office does in the next 10 days and in the weeks and months to come heading into the draft and free agency. And it's really, really going to be interesting to me to track in the next 5 years how this trade looks for each team, both in how Blake Griffin, whether he's able to stay healthy or not, what his production levels look like in Detroit, how his game ages as he reaches 32 years old at the end of his contract, and how his deal may limit Detroit's cap flexibility. On the other hand, from the Clippers' perspective, are they ever able to find a talent like Blake Griffin again to build this team around? And if they aren't, it could be a failure, even if the contract would have been crippling. So it's definitely something that's going to be really, really interesting to keep an eye on. If you want more coverage of this deal and of the Clippers heading into the trade deadline, be sure to check out the Locked On Clippers podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han and check out ClipsNation.com.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Remember, you still have a chance to win 2 tickets for you and a guest to join Matt and I at the Timberwolves Bulls game February 9th. That's 2 weeks. That's just about 2 weeks away now. So all you have to do, take 30 seconds of your time, go to your favorite podcast provider, go to iTunes, Android, Stitcher, wherever you like to listen to podcasts, leave us a review, screenshot that review, and send it to lockedonbulls@gmail.com, and we will put you in the lottery to win for a chance to win those tickets. We're going to pull the entries sometime at the end of this week, so through Friday, so we give you a chance, a few more days to submit all of those reviews for us. Tomorrow's guest is Oliver Maroney. He is a writer for Up Rocks. He's covered the Portland Trailblazers as the Bulls take them on Wednesday, so we'll have him on for you guys tomorrow. Maybe talk about a deal that could be in place in Portland and so much more with Oliver Maroney. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.